Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. It's Jesse Green here at the control panels. And today I'm joined by my guest, Tony Hobby, who is the founder and principal dentist at Island Dental in Adelaide. Tony's got an incredible pedigree when it comes to dentistry. And from a very early age, he's been someone who thinks a little differently and challenges the status quo. Now, he might not use those words himself, but I think he's been at the forefront of dentistry pretty much his whole career. What I really enjoyed talking to Tony about today was his background in AFL football and the culture of the team and how that translated to a lot of what guided him throughout his practicing career. I really have enjoyed having the opportunity to talk to Tony. He's a man of immense wisdom, a great amount of intelligence, both emotionally and intellectually. And what I really appreciate as well is being able to apply that for great success in his own life and indeed his own practice. It's been an absolute treat and a pleasure to welcome Tony to the podcast, and I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I've enjoyed recording it. Now, before we do get to that particular conversation with Tony, I want to share with you a resource which is called the Earn More, Work Less Pro Tip Video Series, which is a series of 20 videos with easy to implement, simple to digest pieces of information that you can use in your practice today to earn more and work less. If you want to grab a hold of those videos, you can head across to savvydentist.com/pro tips and we'll deliver those videos to you day by day to make sure you've got your daily intake of good stuff to grow your practice as well. So that's there for you. But now let's get on to our conversation with Tony Hobby. I, as always, have a pen and paper handy because this episode is dripping with gold. You're going to want to take notes. And more importantly, you're going to want to take action on those notes. So here it is, Tony Hobby. Enjoy it. Tony Hobby, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us. How are you, mate?
I'm good, thank you.
That's great. Mate, I've been looking forward to having this conversation for quite a while, actually, and you've been traveling all over the states and doing all sorts of fun things. So, firstly, welcome back, back to winter, and you're coming from a lovely warm states back to the cool parts of Australia. Tony, you've got a long history as a very preeminent dentist in Adelaide. You're the founder of Island Dental. You've had a wonderful career in dentistry. And really, the conversation I wanted to talk to you about today was, again, just some of the lessons you've learned, some of the things you've observed, and some of the secrets you might have accumulated and pearls of wisdom along the way. So when we had the opportunity to meet and we were introduced by our mutual friend Vardy, one of the things I really observed about you, amongst many things, is you have a great passion for Australian rules football. You're a big fan of the Port Adelaide Football Club. You've been a fan of theirs for a long, long time. You've been involved in the club. I wanted to ask you, just before we get into talking about dentistry and practice, what is it about footy that you really enjoy?
Well, it's interesting because it goes right back to when I was a kid. And my father was my coach. And coming from the country, you always got involved in sport. It was a common denominator throughout the whole group. I was recruited by Port Adelaide and won a scholarship to go to one of the colleges here in Adelaide, and that sort of opened up a new world for me. Yeah, so then through that, my coach at the time, a guy called Foss Williams, was a great mentor, and his value systems, my value system, really clicked. And so from that, played and then coached and then went into administration. So it's been a 40-odd year love affair.
So I can see that you've had a long history there, mate, and obviously being recruited to play for the team and spending 40 years there is a phenomenal partnership, longevity. When you look at the game now and you see the players running around the field and you see the values that your mentor instilled in you, how have they shaped your life?
Well, I think the players of today, if that's the question you're asking, it's obviously more professional at the AFL level, and as a result of that, they're better, except for the goal kicking, which is still a bit of a problem. it's about being the best that you can be. Mm. And as I say, my coach at the time, we didn't have the most skillful side, but we applied ourselves to our absolute maximum. And I reckon that's a lesson in life. And obviously, in dentistry, it's about how much work you're prepared to put in to get the maximum return. And certainly, that's one of the key values that I learned from him and our football team. And hopefully, we applied that when we launched our bid to get in the AFL. And I'm happy to say that, you know, I had a large role in our bid document to actually gain the license. And it was wonderful to win that premiership in 2004.
I remember that premiership very well, Tony. I watched that game, and yeah, I think the whole of Port Adelaide and the Adelaide generally, actually, I think even the Crows fans were probably begrudgingly, but cheering you on a lot as well. And I think all of Australia was pretty happy to see that. I want to talk to you about what lessons you've brought from footy into dentistry. You've already touched on one, and that is you may not be the most skillful side, but it's about applying yourself for maximum result, working hard, persisting. What sort of lessons did Foss teach you that you think you took into Island Dental or more broadly your dental career beyond working hard, applying yourself?
I think some of these things you do and you don't quite realise what you are doing at the time.
Mm.
But, I mean, Foss was one of those coaches and then another guy called Jack Cale. And just the whole ethos of Port Adelaide was about your expectation of where you want to be. And things like goal setting and strategies and having a sense of where you want to take, you know, the football club, in this case, the practice. But I think probably the for people listening to this and maybe young people, one of the things I really learned from a formal point when we were actually doing the bid for the AFL was strategic planning and the strategic planning process. And I think that's a great lesson for anyone at any stage in their career, but certainly if for a young person, a new graduate or someone thinking about setting up their own business or practice or whatever, then to go through that strategic planning process is valuable. Working out who you are and what you want to be and having a vision of where you want your practice to, what you want it to look like, what it wants to feel like, how you want the staff to behave, to act. And if you set the strategic planning process, it actually acts as a model for you in everything you do, in your recruiting of staff, your value system, the whole process. And so it was formalized way back there in 1995, but the embryonic part of it, you know, was right in the 70s when I sort of first graduated and set up my own business.
Yeah, I really resonate with the strategic planning element there and the importance of it. We certainly do that on a regular basis. We review our strategic plan, and what I feel about strategic plans is that for me, it's like the north on my compass. It's the lens through which I can view things, the lens through which I can make decisions. Does this fit with my vision? Does this fit with where I'm going? And I don't know about you, Tony, but sometimes the busyness or the whirlwind of day-to-day life, sometimes we can find ourselves caught up with this, that, and the other, and the urgency to make a decision about this or that. And sometimes, certainly spoken to a few people recently where they've deviated from their path, and just referring back to that strategic plan is, I think, a really nice way of getting back on track and moving to where you want to go. I want to just talk to you about your dental career and transitioning from footy to dentistry. Were you studying dentistry and playing footy at the same time?
Yes, it was. I spent a fair amount of time in undergraduate school in plaster, broken a few bones along the way.
Yeah.
In fact, the dean of the school called me to his office. And in those days, everyone was, Mr. Hobby, you're going to have to make a decision. You can't go into clinic in plaster all the time. So he's encouraged me to maybe retire from football early. And, of course, I took no notice of him.
Good.
and continued to play until halfway through fifth year. And I sort of set a goal of topping the year. So something had to give. And so footy finished at that stage for me. And I was also carrying a snapped anterior cruciate wouldn't help. So concentrated on the academics in the final part of fifth year.
So I've got to ask you, were the lecturers and the demonstrators Port Adelaide fans? I want to ask you if it gave you any street cred in the dental school.
Absolutely. As you're probably aware, when you're doing your crown and bridge work, you have to do your own wax-ups and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And one of the technicians was a staunch football follower, and so I'd sort of get down there and I'd ask him if he could just give me a bit of a hand with this wax up, and I'd just tell him footy stories and who we're playing and what we're doing and all that sort of stuff. And by the time I'd finished talking, he'd finish my wax up for me. So I was able to get a fair amount of crown and bridge done in the last year using my footy stories.
Yeah, wonderful. So of footy stories, when you would have come against some strong opposition, you would have taken a few blows, I'm sure. What did you observe when you were competing with the opposition? How did you figure out their moves? How did you look at and how did you analyse your opposition?
Well, back there in the 70s, it wasn't quite as it is today where you got so many assistant coaches and they've got all the statistics and all that sort of stuff. It was a lot more basic in those days, but we were a very successful club and had won a number of premierships and things like that, and it was always around the mark. And it was more a case of what your expectation was of yourself and your team and your teammates.
Yeah.
And a fanatical desire to succeed to the point where, you know, you do crazy things and run into people way bigger than yourself and come off second best. But that was the expectation. And I guess it's the same thing in dentistry, isn't it, with your expectation of your fellow staff members and your fellow colleagues. And over the years, I mean, the practice, we ended up with, at our peak, 27, 28 people in the practice.
Yeah.
And so often you'd get to a stage where the culture of the place was such that you didn't need to move someone on. Mm. The actual fellow staff members would move them on for you because they didn't fit the culture or the values of the practice. And that's the same with the footy team, in that at the end of the day, you're all running to a plan. And if you deviate from the plan, you want to be the individual, then maybe you should do something else. This is not the team for you.
Yeah.
It's the only way you can keep a staff of 27 together.
So there'll be a lot of people listening to this podcast who'll be saying, wow, that's fascinating and what a great experience to have played footy with Port Adelaide and play at a really high level. And I've certainly got some more questions I'd like to ask you. But while we're on the topic of culture, obviously the footy club spent a long time creating that culture. But you had to then create a culture in your own practice. I'm curious to ask you specifically some of the things you did to engender that culture, to maintain that culture and protect that culture, and obviously hand it over to the people who are able to, in the nicest possible way, point out when someone wasn't a fit. What did you do as the founder of the practice to create that from the get-go?
I think that you mentioned it before is you've got to have a clear vision of how you want the practice to be.
Mm.
And so when way back in 1977, when set up the first practice, you've got a feel for how you want the dental practice to be. And in those days, most dental practices were green carpet and wood paneling. And I wanted to break the mold. And so we had, and you never use red. So the practice was red, white, and blue. We had a head and shoulders of Marilyn Monroe with a big smile, 10 feet by 10 feet. And because my vision was to have a dental practice that people wanted to go to. And back those days, people were frightened and fear was a big factor. So it needed to be different because that's the environment that I wanted to work in. And once you've set that vision and the mission, you recruit people who want to be part of that vision.
Mm.
That's the role of the leader.
Yeah.
The leader has to set the vision and then recruit the people who will buy into that vision. And you don't always get it right, of course, but gradually if you get the right sort of people, then it self-propagates itself.
Mm.
And you also, and I think you mentioned this before, you've got to keep going back to it. You can't just sort of set it and think, oh, that's all done. Every now and then you need to go back to the vision, you need to go back to the values and keep on saying, am I being true to this? And one, you generate more people and more people. And staff meetings, often you would actually talk about that vision or those values and this is why we're here and just reinforcing all the time, because then I guess your staff become your disciples as well. And so that develops the culture. And it, you know, it doesn't happen overnight, but in the beginning is the vision.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm thinking back to the 70s, having a Marilyn Monroe 10 by 10 picture head and shoulders in your waiting room would have been quite out there for the time, I imagine. So it seems to me, Tony, that you've had this entrepreneurial streak from a very early age, the ability to think differently, the ability to have a clear picture of what you want. And one of my views around entrepreneurs, and it's not that long ago that being called an entrepreneur as a dentist was almost an insult, but now it's a badge of honor. But my view on that is the ability to be nimble, the ability to be agile. And I think there's some metaphors there that probably translate from footy to dentistry as well, being able to read the play and to make adjustments as you go. So in terms of being able to read the play and make adjustments, there's obviously the trends that have come and gone through dentistry. Things go in and out of fashion. What have been the trends that you think over the last 20 or 30 years have really shaped the profession, you know, going back perhaps a couple of decades to now?
Well, in South Australia, we were very lucky in that we had a hygiene school and the rest of Australia didn't.
Mm.
And so one of the big things in South Australia was prevention.
Mm.
And I'm talking about genuine prevention, and we were able to follow that up with hygienists. And so very early on, I recognised that one of the visions was to genuinely prevent dental disease. And you can't do that as a dentist and be profitable at the same time.
No.
And so very early on, hygienists to help with that mission. And they have been a wonderful, wonderful positive for the practice. And we currently have 5 hygienists, and they are so valuable to not only the profitability of the practice, but also the ethos of the practice. And often I'd sort of say to other dentists, look, sometimes a patient's not ready for this big treatment plan or whatever. So we store them in hygiene.
Yeah.
We keep them in the practice and we keep them healthy. And eventually when the time is right for them, they'll make that decision. And so we've got to keep on remembering that most of dentistry is discretionary.
Mm.
And so, but you don't want the patient going off somewhere else and getting that nice veneer case or done or whatever that you've sort of planted all the seeds, and you don't want that being done somewhere else. So I guess prevention and hygienists was a major thing. And then, of course, cosmetics today is everyone's a cosmetic dentist, but back in the early 80s, I think the first veneer was done in the States in 1982.
Wow.
So luckily I was in the States at the time and got exposed to veneers, and so we became a very much a preventive / cosmetic practice in the early 80s. And that for me was very rewarding in terms of changing people's lives. And that's one of the things that I think dentistry does. It's more than just filling teeth and things like that, because no one ever buys a filling or a veneer or a crown. They buy what it will do for them.
Yeah, totally.
And I think it's really important to remember that. It's just the vehicle that enables that to occur. And so the cosmetics become a big thing in the 80s. And then, of course, the implants, they become much more readily available. They're much easier to do. They're much more cost available. And that has changed dentistry again. And in recent times, of course, you talked about trends. I guess corporatization has become a major factor in dentistry and health, the involvement of health funds. There was a time when, in my early days, health funds probably didn't even exist much. And now, of course, it's a major factor in people's decisions about what dentistry they get done and where they get it done. It may not be for the better, but anyway, it's a trend.
Yeah, yeah, totally. So one of the things I'm thinking is I've heard you list off all those trends is that at all of those periods of time, Tony, you've been at the forefront of that, being in the States to see that first veneer done, having the ability to bring hygiene and prevention into your practice in a very early stage. When things were not quite as common as they are now, obviously there's hygienists quite commonly in practice, veneers are done almost routinely, implants are almost done routinely, so on and so forth. So what I wanted to ask you is, how did you stay ahead of the curve? What were you doing that people were not doing? What were you thinking that people were not thinking?
Well, I think the US of A is a wonderful area to be involved in.
Mm.
And I'd sort of encourage certainly younger dentists to just to keep up with what's happening in the States. Obviously, get as many journals and magazines as possible. There's a journal that's called The Profitable Dentist out of the States, which isn't sort of like all clinical, but it's about practice management and what trends are happening over there. And what you're doing, like, for example, with podcasts, you know, there are a number of avenues that you can get what's happening around the place. And you say I'm an entrepreneur. I don't think I've had an original idea in my life. I think I'd steal ideas from wherever I get them. But you just got to keep at it. That's the key, is, you know, have an open mind. Listen to the podcasts or the CDs or in the car so that you're constantly learning, constantly looking at what are the trends and does this fit to my vision?
Yeah, totally. And just to be clear on the original ideas, Tony, I think most entrepreneurs have never had an original idea in their life as well. I think for me, and I know lots of people in business as well, their best ideas come from applying an idea outside of their industry and taking it into their industry and making it relevant. And
absolutely.
So I think, you know, there's a lot to be said for observing other businesses beyond dentistry as well. And do you have a view on that?
Absolutely. I think one of the greatest, in fact, a guy called Jim Rohn, who's was a motivational speaker, said one of the greatest gifts you can give your family is a library. And most of my library is on anything but dentistry. It's all about, you know, successful companies and selling and a whole range of things. And then you apply those things to dentistry. And so I agree entirely with what you're saying, is that you see what's happening in the big wide world, and then you apply it to a little village industry called dentistry.
Yeah, and Jim Rohn, wow, he was the godfather of all of that, really, is kind of almost at the source. And I had the good fortune of speaking to another mentor the other day who used to share the stage with a fellow who you'll know called Zig Ziglar, and learned a lot from books from Zig Ziglar and Jim Rohn and all those guys. Tony, I had the good fortune to come and spend some time with you and your team at Island Dental. It's going back a year or two now, and one of the things I observed at that particular encounter was you're a very skillful communicator. You've got a way with words. You're able to craft meaning with words. One of my observations when it comes to communication, and this is going to sound a little bit, I don't know, perhaps controversial, but my observation for most people when they communicate is they're a little bit lax with their words. They don't put thought behind their words. They're not quite conscious of the meaning that they're creating with their words. One of the things I notice when you communicate, though, and something that I try to do, is you're very deliberate with the words you choose and the meaning you create. And I'm curious to understand how you learned that skill. I know how I became aware of mine, but how did you learn the skill of communicating and specifically putting the intention behind the words?
Well, I guess it goes right back, and I've got to give credit to a guy called Omer Reed in the States. And I think I alluded before that, you know, I had a very good academic undergraduate career, but one of the things I felt was that there's more than just margins. And how do I communicate with patients and get them to yes? And one of the things I think I should stress there is that you've got it. Your intention is that you would treat someone as if it was a member of your family.
Absolutely.
That's absolutely critical first and foremost, is that whatever treatment that is being recommended or proposed is something that you would do for your wife, your sister, your dad, your mum, or whatever. That's critical to have that at the forefront. And then it's the next thing is that I think we're doing a major disservice to your patient if you can't get them to make a decision that is in their best interest. And so how do you take that person from not making that decision, using whatever skills you have available to get them to the yes situation that is in their best interest? And that's when, you know, I started to do a lot of work with people like Omer Reed, Will Southam, and then in modern times, there are lots of other people out with how to use words and pictures and things like that to get your message across. So I think it's from the outset, it's having a mental position of saying, well, how do I get a person to yes, not because it's more profitable for me, but it's actually in their best interest. Often I've been accused of being a great salesman. My answer to that is that I've never sold anything to anyone, but I've helped a lot of people buy.
Yeah.
Now, very different tangent. So it's a mental state, but there are countless books and CDs and courses on being able to do it. But first up, you have to understand the reason why you want to do it.
Yeah. One of the things, again, I really just wanted to touch on there is when you said you've never sold anything, but you've helped a lot of people buy, I feel very strongly that that's the right way to go as well. And that's something that I hold dear, because there's a very different energy when you're trying to sell something compared to someone buying something. It's push versus pull. And when someone's wanting to buy something, it's a more pleasant experience for everyone. No one wants to be sold and no one really wants to sell, but people do buy. And I think you're absolutely right. And ladies and gents, if you've just tuned into our podcast, I'm having a conversation with Tony Hobby, and I'd really encourage you to go back and just listen to that last 30 seconds again, because there's some absolute pearls of wisdom there that, you know, come with experience in the trenches. This is not academic stuff. This is not from a textbook. This is real world, real life dentistry from the coalface and what Tony shared with you. If you take a moment to listen to it and absorb it and apply it, it'll really stand you in very good stead for your practice and your career as well. So, Tony, I want to talk a little bit about longevity. The average age of the listener to this podcast is younger than you and me. So, we've got a few more gray hairs than perhaps the average person driving to work at the moment listening to this podcast. But with gray hair comes wisdom, with gray hair comes experience. And I wanted to ask you, what do you feel have been the greatest experiences of your particular career, greatest learnings?
With longevity, how do you stay in dentistry for a long period of time?
How to stay in the game?
Well, I think first up, you have to love what you do. That's critical. And if it's not loving what you do, it's loving the people that you're doing it for.
Mm.
So really, one of the fundamentals of my career is to create relationships with patients.
Mm.
And I think that's really critical. So when you create relationships, you create bonds with people and you have the ups and downs and all that sort of their life with them, and they have it with us. I mean, personalizing what you do, you know, we've got photos of the kids everywhere and the grandchildren everywhere. And it's not just a matter of going to see the dentist, it's going to see a friend.
Mm.
And creating that sort of environment where people actually do enjoy actually going to the dentist. I know that sounds really weird for some people, but and also setting up the actual physical environment of something that you like to go to. Because at the end of the day, you're going to be there probably more time than you are going to be at home. So make it comfortable, make it visually attractive, hire good people around you that will keep you young and keep you energetic, and I guess just love being with the people and through your dentistry, seeing a change in their life. And that happens on a routine basis. You take someone from who is fearful of the dental experience, and then all of a sudden they grow and they grow and they grow. And you know whether you've done a good job or not. If you're not getting a referral within the first, you know, one or two encounters with that person, you haven't made it with them. Because the best, I mean, there's all this talk about, you know, the internet and all these advertising campaigns or whatever. Still the best, the absolute best way to build your practice is by a referral, just personal referrals. And that happens when you link with that patient. When you create enough monumental moments, that person actively goes out and campaigns for you. And that's rewarding. It's a good sense of I've done something good for some people and they've said thank you in the best possible way, and that is to send their loved ones and their family to see you.
Again, I really resonate with the relationship part, Tony, because for me, my whole, if you've ever come across a book called Start With Why by Simon Sinek, he talks about your why. And for me, it's always been about having interesting conversations with interesting people, everything I do, which is really what we're doing now. I enjoy just having a chat with people, and certainly for dentistry, that's been a theme as well. And that's always held me in very good stead, being able to connect with people. Doesn't matter what sort of business you're in, even if it's not related to business, just life, you know, being able to relate to people and have a communication or conversation, I should say, is really fundamental to that human-to-human connection. And connection is really what gives us all meaning and purpose in our lives. And I think that's an important part.
I guess the other thing I just thought of, the other thing is to really make sure you have fun. That doesn't mean it's a joke.
No.
But you actually have fun there. And the number of times I've hired people and they weren't allowed to actually talk. They weren't allowed to talk in the actual surgery. And I said, you've got to be kidding me. And we've got conversations going all the time. But the key is that you and people would say, how do you keep the patient involved in that? Well, you stop and you ask for the patient's little input into what you're talking about. And then away you go. You keep going again. Whatever you can do to make it fun at work, just little celebrations, just a few practical jokes on people and things like that, that brings some, you break, because dentistry is a very stressful job. And so you need to, by bringing some fun, it makes it worthwhile for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. And life is short. You know, I think you've got to enjoy yourself and have fun. And as you said, being fun doesn't mean taking it as a joke or not being serious about the work you do. It's about bringing a lightness to it. And again, one of our core values in our practice is to have fun. And we always say that we take our work seriously. We just try not to take ourselves so seriously. And so, you know, that's again held us in good stead. Tony, you mentioned to me some of the trends around corporatization, the involvement of health funds, and I can't let the conversation go without just referencing that for a moment, because that is a trend. We're seeing roll-ups of practices. We're seeing consolidation of ownership. For the family practice, the single guy, the independently owned practice, my take on the way to compete in that space or compete in the market to stay relevant is exactly the things we've spoken about, you know, relationships, connection, all those sorts of things. Would you have any other insights that you'd share for the independently owned practice owners in the modern environment, how to make a go of it?
Well, I think that the big S word is critical. Service.
Yep.
And I'm talking about not just general service. I'm talking about outstanding service.
Yep.
Because it's the only way we've got to compete.
Mm-hmm.
And I in a sense, I feel like a bit of a hypocrite here because, as you probably were aware, I sold Island Dental 11 years ago to Dental Corporation. But the good thing about that, and it was basically because it was too big for one or two people to buy. And they allowed me for a number of years to just keep doing what I'd been doing with no interference whatsoever, which was outstanding. But the way that, in my opinion, that you compete with the corporatization or with the health funds is to provide, one, the environment that we've spoken about before that, yep. that people feel good about being at. And they also see that their dollar is actually being spent on helping them have a better environment, number one, but also just outstanding service, way above what just is the norm. And the Ritz-Carlton, the Nordstrom, that level of service that you know who the people are, you know how what makes them tick, you keep notes on people, all those sorts of things so that it's very hard for that person to actually leave the practice.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. I think there's an absolute opportunity in that as well because I think as Australians, sadly, the level of service in lots of our interactions with businesses is mediocre at best. You know, we only need to think about telecommunications companies or banks or anything of that nature. And so, thankfully, in one way, the bar has been set very low. And so, people's service expectations are not outrageous. And it's not hard to be amazing in their eyes. It's not hard to go that extra mile, but it is about doing it consistently and about doing it with intention as well. Yes?
No question about that. And we've got a little sign in our staff room before the staff go from the staff room out to clinical and reception, is that, are you a 10? You've got to be a 10. You can't be an 8 or a 9 or whatever. You're on stage and the question gets asked before they open the door to go on stage, are you a 10? Are you at your absolute best each and every time you're out there? And that's a critical mindset to provide that awesome service that you're aiming to provide.
And the good thing is you get to choose to be a 10, right? You get to choose your number. It's your call. You know, you can say, oh, I've had a fight with my wife or the dog bit me or whatever it is, but you get to choose your number. And my wife is fond of saying, you know, I walk like a 10, I talk like a 10, I am a 10, and exactly that. So, Tony, I love that. Mate, you've been incredibly generous with your time today, and I thank you very much. And there's so many pearls of wisdom that come, as I said a moment ago, from real-world experience, not from reading a book and thinking about it, but actually applying it, doing it, perhaps losing a bit of bark along the way. And what I really love about this is really practical and it works. Tony, I want to ask you about the future for you, for the profession, just as we wrap up. If you had a crystal ball, and I know none of us have a crystal ball, what do you see happening in the life and times of Tony Hobby? And what do you see happening in the life and times of the dental profession?
I'll answer the first one, which is my situation is I've sort of cut back to sort of being semi-retired, working 3 days a week and roughly 100 days a year. And we'll see where that takes us going forward. In terms of the profession, it's challenging. There's no doubt it's challenging, but I'm still bullish about where it can be.
Me too.
And as you said before about the, there's a lot of practices that are mediocre and average. Why not be outstanding? And that you're going to stand out as a result of that. And so pay your dues, do the work, have some coaching if you feel uncomfortable just doing it all by yourself, because there are a number of different coaches out there and avenues that you can get some training in. And I can't sort of give you a crystal ball about what to do or whatever, but the general principles that we talked about, the relationships and the people don't change.
Nah.
And so if you become really good at working with people, then I think that your career will be satisfying for you and it'll be profitable both emotionally and financially.
Yeah, I love that, mate. Thank you. Tony, once again, you've been really wonderfully generous with your time today, wonderfully generous with your insights, your pearls of wisdom. And from all of us here at the Savvy Dentist Podcast, I just want to say thank you. And look forward to catching up again soon.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Jesse.
Thanks, mate.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/Savvy Dentist.